Hour number three, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Thursday, live at the Omni Nashville Hotel at Kitchen Notes, as the NHL trade deadline is less than 24 hours away now. We say hello to Greg Wyshynski of ESPN, presented by Old National Bank. Get old. And Greg, the Predators, I guess we've been calling it, have waved the white flag, but they're starting to sell off some assets, but the big names still remain. How you doing?
How dare you not call Nick Blankenberg a big name? I mean, that's many people are calling this the Blankenberg deadline. But no, you're right. It's going to start probably picking up business in the next 24 hours as we get closer to the deadline tomorrow. And you know, I get the sense a lot of people believe that Eric Wall is probably going to move. I kind of agree with that sentiment. You look around at the prices being paid for players that are sort of commiserate to his place in the lineup, and it's definitely a seller's market, so there's no reason why you wouldn't. And then, you know, it'll be interesting to see how farther down, how deeper the cut goes. I think of the big three that we always talk about with Riley, Stamkos, and Marchessault, Marchessault is probably the one that people believe is most likely to move, maybe just out of change because of the playoff pedigree, but we'll see what happens with that, because that will require maybe for some teams to get a little bit creative financially.
So in your mind, when you look at what Barry's done so far, because I was pretty impressed. You get I don't care if it's 2028 or, you know, next year, he got a second round pick for Mike McCarron, he got a third round pick for Cole Smith, I know he got a fifth for Blankenberg. That's I call that currency. So what could the incoming GM have to work with next year, even though fans might look at this, okay, they're going in full rebuild depending on what else they sell? I feel like with all that draft capital, you can turn this around sooner rather than later.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I the Cole Smith move I thought was great. I mean, I think getting a third out of that, like you said, even though it might be a little bit down the line, is great. And obviously McCarron getting a second is sort of indicative of what I was saying before, which is supporting cast players really, really bringing back a strong return. I'm still trying to figure out how the Blackhawks pulled a first round pick out of Edmonton for Jason Dickinson, but I digress. Yeah. It does set up the next guy pretty well. You know, the more draft capital you have, the more creative you can be. Look no further than the Utah Mammoth, where I think, you know, the key to that trade of them getting Mackenzie Weegar was the ability to put together three second round picks and send them to Calgary to complete that trade. So, again, it's all about assets and amassing them as best you can. And then comes the tricky part, which is how you use them. And I hate to kick a team while it's down, but, you know, to mention again, spending a first-round pick on Jason Dickinson, if you're the Edmonton Oilers, if you look at what's been put out by Stan Bowman in the last year and what's come in, it's just been pretty asset management for a team that needs to maximize their return on everything, considering their franchise player, Connor McDavid, basically gave them a three window to win before he leaves.
Barry Trotz has been very adamant and sane when it comes to Ryan O'Reilly. Even though O'Reilly has no trade protection, he's talking to him every step of the way. O'Reilly wants to stay here. He's going to be do right by him, but he has to absolutely get blown away. So in my mind, being blown away would be like multiple firsts, a prospect, and a roster player to fill in until, you know, whoever is ready. Is that on the right track of being blown away?
I mean, there's different levels of blown away. There's apparently the blown away that St. Louis is looking for, which I guess is like Buffalo signing over their franchise charter to acquire Robert Thomas.
Well, Parayko said, no, I'm good.
And Parayko said, no, I'm good. We'll talk about that in a second. Yeah. I think that's pretty commiserate with what people have expected and what the going rates are. Again, it is a seller's market out there. And you know, transactions like the Quinn Hughes trade sort of, you know, set the market ceiling for elite players. And, you know, you start to hear what the Blues are looking for Thomas. And for players like Parayko, and that kind of comes into play too. So these guys all have a real sense of what the marketplace looks like. And everybody I've talked to in the last week continually is telling me how high the prices are and how difficult it is to try to make these moves without having to pay an arm and a leg to do so. But on the Parayko thing quickly, like, man, what a kick in the teeth for Buffalo. Like, things are going so well. Like, they're going to end their playoff drought. They're feeling good about life. And then they go out and try to acquire a guy, and he's just like, I ain't going to Buffalo. Like, and we're only a few months removed from, you know, Kevin Adams, the former GM, being like, nobody wants to come here because we don't have elm trees. And now there's like a ton of reports about Parayko wanted to go play in California instead. And it's just like, oh, man, Buffalo, things are going good, man.
Greg Wyshynski is with us. Greg, I am fascinated by your job these next 24 hours because, you know, as you well know, there's a lot of fake accounts out there. How do you go about, you know, validating what is accurate and what's not?
It's a great question. You know, listen, I'll have our various sources, you know, agents, people in front offices that we can kind of rely on to confirm information or grab information. You know, it's tough. You work really hard to be accurate this time of year because not only are you trying to track down people who are having the busiest time of their year and right. hoping that one of them can text you back or call you back in a short amount of time, but you're also trying to avoid the smoke screens and the things that are put out there, you know, for reasons that maybe us on the outside don't understand, but within the context of a negotiation, it makes more sense. And that leads me to something that's really been interesting to watch at this deadline, which is we've had at least four instances in which trades have leaked without the principal of that trade agreeing to be traded. Tyler Myers to Detroit, Mackenzie Weegar to Utah, Jason Dickinson to Edmonton, and then most famously Colton Parayko to the Sabres. And two of those trades didn't happen. I can't for the life of me remember the last deadline where these many trades have leaked where the principal of the trade hadn't actually agreed to be traded. There's something going on, and I'm not quite sure what it is, but it's an intriguing little sidebar to this deadline for sure.
So I know for us, like, we keep refreshing to do all that, but do you stay awake the next one? Because we're all looking to you, like, what's breaking, what's happening? I mean, do you leave the office? Do you have, like, four computers set up? How do you work this?
Well, I mean, for me, it's easy. I do have a massive cocaine habit, but
That'll do it.
Starting last night into tomorrow at 3 p.m., it is kind of your doctor on call. You're pretty sure that once you get a good half an hour after the West Coast games end, that you might be able to call it, which is where I was last night. I just assumed that we weren't going to get anything really breaking overnight. But, you know, this is going to be a real long night tonight, not only in preparing for stuff for tomorrow, but also keeping an eye out or in an ear open for things that might happen. And then tomorrow I'm actually in Bristol. You know, I'm in Bristol all day. I'll be getting up there super early. I've got some video show stuff to do and some podcast stuff to do. And, you know, if they need me on TV, I'll wear a tie. But it's going to be a long, long day, and it's a long, long day reaching out to sources. And then also, you know, trying to be as quick as you can to evaluate these things. It's tough. Because you don't know how some of these trades are going to work out, but it doesn't mean you get away from writing winners and losers, which is what I'll be doing mostly tomorrow, I think.
Can I just say this? And look, I love Adam Schefter. I think he does a fantastic job. But he broke an NBA trade, and he broke the Panarin trade. Like, can he just stay in his lane and let you guys do it? I mean, are you going to be breaking Jets trades soon? Is that what we're getting?
No, Jets trades break me is the way that usually works. But I got a real kick out of Schefter breaking the Panarin thing. I still haven't gotten a chance to ask him how that came about, but that's really funny. But you know, I think you make a good point, which is that, you know, at this time of year, information comes from weird places. I think specifically about this account I've been following on Twitter, where it's just that follows who guys are following or unfollowing on Instagram. Like, for example, Jeff Skinner just unfollowed the San Jose Sharks because they cut him. I've been wondering if tomorrow at some point that account's going to put out something that they break a trade based on somebody who's followed somebody on Instagram. Like, it's possible, and so that's what makes it exciting, is to We all know the insiders that we're going to rely on. We all know the networks are going to rely on. Hopefully people rely on ESPN. But it's sometimes those little weird pockets of information you have to kind of keep your eye out for that ultimately could provide a breaking trade, and you don't realize it at first.
Do you get you've been doing this a long time now, Greg, but do you get the adrenaline rush when you break, whether it's a trade or break news? I've done it twice in my career because that's not really my thing. And both times I've had like the sweats because I just wanted to make sure I was right.
It's two levels of sweats. One is that you hope you're right in what you break. I remember being really early on the PK Subban trade to the Devils at the draft that year that it happened. And to the point where like SportsCenter had me on the air before it was announced. And I'm like, really hope I got this right. If they want to talk to me, but it's hoping that you have the breaking news correct, and then just hoping that you have the details correct. I'm a real stickler for not reporting something until you've got it all nailed down. And to this day, it still bugs me when I think I've got all the details on a trade, then the release comes out, and it's like, wait, I didn't have that sixth round pick, you know. And it's just not a big deal to anybody but me, but you just want to make sure that you get accurate information out there, because ultimately, you know, people are going to re-quote it and retweet it and everything else, and it becomes kind of, you know, canonical if you're not and you want that to be accurate.
The first time, it wasn't really that I broke something; it was just I quoted David Poile, and this was kind of your fault because it was when the Mike Ribeiro, I think they had re-signed Mike Ribeiro or something, and I quoted David. And you retweet or you DM me and were like, did he really say this? And I was like, yeah. And you retweeted it. And then my Twitter blew up. it was, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but you know, it was when Ribeiro was kind of going through all his stuff and it was a little bit of a controversial signing.
You're saying that Greg hopped in your DMs?
Yeah, he did. He did hop in my DMs. We've been best friends ever since.
it's great. It's a feeling for those who've ever like been in the industry, like when you do break news and you're the first out of the gate and no one else has it, it kind of feels like you're on the edge of a building and you're just staring down. You're right? You know what I mean? Like there's no safety harness, there's no nothing. And then eventually you can just kind of like climb back through the window when it becomes apparent that you were correct. But
I mean,
we've
right.
all had
I mean,
those moments.
Yeah, I've only broken two big stories and I'm like, oh my gosh, if these are wrong, I'm dead. I'm done. Yeah. I'm done. Right.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, and then of course it becomes, I mean, ultimately it's also, you know, part of this is also none of us are like writing fiction here. Like if we're getting news, we're relying on people telling us the news. And so, on top of everything else, if you feel like you've gotten something wrong, then ultimately that means a source burned you. And then are they a bad source? Did they have a reason to? What happened on your end to end up getting something wrong? Luckily, that hasn't happened to me a lot. But it always is in the back of your mind of being like, please tell me the people that I've relied on for information are giving me good information.
Let me ask you, this was a question at the time I thought was really dumb, but then it made more sense. Somebody asked one time, they said, do you have a gut feeling something's going to happen? And I'm like, oh, man, I don't know. Do you have those, like, tonight, do you have a gut feeling something big's going to happen?
Oh, no, because I have a bad spidey sense for, like, when things are going to happen, but I have a good spidey sense for whether the people I'm talking to are telling me the truth or whether I think that, you know, the reading between the lines when they're talking to you as to whether or not there might be more to what they're saying. Like, I guess it's more crap detector than spidey sense if we're being honest,
but I do
have a good sense of that. And you know, it's one of the fun things about journalism is that, you know, you talk to a ton of people and then you kind of have to figure out what they haven't told you or why they're telling you the things they have told you.
Yep, right.
And that can lead you down a billion different places.
You know, it's funny. It'll be June. It'll be 10 years since the PK Subban Shea Weber trade.
Wow.
That is crazy.
That's, you know, time marches on. I just saw Nick Dowd, who got traded from the Capitals to the Golden Knights, I think has been with the Capitals for 8 years.
Wow. Yeah.
And I still remember him being one of those guys at the deadline where it's like, this guy makes no money. Someone should acquire him. And then, you know, he gets traded for a first, like a second and a third today or whatever it was. So time match marches on, but the deadline's always fun. I mean, it's the next 24 hours is a blast. Even if nothing happens, the speculation, the things that get set up for the off season, because sometimes it's these trades that don't happen that all of a sudden lead to the big things that do happen in the summer. Like it's all just a really fun time of year. And then we exhale and wait for the playoffs to start.
Greg, Chase and I have this great quality that when we, in our interview with you, something big happens. Every time we go off the air within 10 minutes, there'll be something big happen. So there's going to be a massive trade in the next 15 minutes after you hang up with us that you'll have that you will not be able to discuss on the Chase and Big Joe show.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, based on the available information at this trade deadline, it's going to take someone having to say yes to a trade. And that hasn't always happened. But, listen, Robert Thomas is a good example. Like, I still don't hope that there is somebody that's going to step up with the deal that the Blues are looking for. And there are a couple teams that have the kind of players they are looking for. Seattle, Utah. There's a few teams that could really step up and take a big swing if they wanted to. And we'll see if it happens in the next 24 hours.
Do you think O'Reilly or Stamkos are moved by tomorrow?
I am like 105% convinced that Stamkos won't move, just okay, based on everything I understand about that situation. But, you know, O'Reilly's a tricky one. I mean, you know, O'Reilly is in that tier that's a couple up from the guys that are moving, your Nick Waugh's and your Jason Dickinson's. He's kind of in that group with Nazem Kadri and players like that. And so, you know, if somebody's really in on Kadri, they don't get him, or, you know, if they think that they need that kind of player, I mean, do they knock Barry's socks off with an offer? And if it's a team that O'Reilly wants to play for, who knows? I tend to think it won't happen, but you know, I'm not discounting that one as much as I'm discounting the Stamkos one.
Well, going to be interesting. Thanks as always, Greg. Love the conversation, and get some sleep when you can.
Anytime, boys. Talk to you next week.
Greg Wyshynski joining us on the program presented by Old National Bank. Get old. We love having Greg on with us. We'll react to that. And also, I've gotten some questions on the text line that about just kind of this whole process that I want to try and put some clarity to. We'll do that coming up next. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game.